Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Yu. Coming up in this edition, the U.S. has expressed hope that a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip is still possible. Former U.S. President Donald Trump and incumbent President Joe Biden are very likely to face up again in November's presidential race. And violence in Haiti is spiraling out of control and its prime minister remains stranded abroad. We begin with the Middle East. It's been 5 months since the conflict between Israel and Hamas broke out on October the 7th. Health officials in Gaza say the number of people confirmed killed has now passed 30,700. China has consistently called for peace and a two-state solution. British Foreign Minister David Cameron says patience is wearing thin over the lack of humanitarian aid reaching Gaza. Meantime, the U.S. has expressed hope that a ceasefire is still possible. Alex Kadir reports from Tel Aviv.
David Cameron, the UK foreign minister, saying that patience was wearing thin, and officials in London said that Benny Gantz could expect tough talks from David Cameron from the UK. That's also what we've seen coming out of Washington. Benny Gantz was in the United States meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris, with Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, and other US officials. And Israeli officials said he was quite surprised by how tough the response was from the United States, clearly showing that U.S.-Israeli relations are strained, particularly as a result of the humanitarian catastrophe going on in Gaza. That is something the United States and the United Kingdom have put a lot of pressure on Israel for, and that's part of these discussions will be for the UK, for the United States, two of Israel's closest allies, to continue that pressure to find a solution to what Vice President Kamala Harris called the humanitarian catastrophe on the ground. And it shows certainly a ratcheting up of pressure from the UK and the US on Israel to maximize, as Anthony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, said, maximize that aid flowing into Gaza.
That was Alex Kadir reporting from Tel Aviv. The World Food Programme says the number of humanitarian aid convoys entering Gaza daily must at least double to meet the population's most basic needs. In the meantime, it says some aid trucks were turned back by the Israeli military. Akram Al-Satari has more from Gaza.
Minimum aid is reaching Gaza. That has been expressed by different UN actors who have been confirming the fact that people in Gaza are dying because of the starvation, are dying because of the lack to humanitarian assistance. The latest humanitarian assistance that was dropped by the American airplanes and by other regional airplanes, where most of them were reaching, were dropped on the sea, and they were not of benefit for the people of Gaza. People of Gaza have been complaining about the quality of the work that has been done, and have been underlining the fact that this humanitarian assistance should enter Gaza in such a regular way, in a structured manner, and that should be delivered to the authorities or UN organizations on the ground, so that they would be able then to deliver them to the people who need them. In Gaza Strip, around 56, 57 truckloads were entering, which means less than 0.5% of the overall need of the Gaza Strip, which is 1,000 truckloads a day. So the situation is still dire, and it's even getting more dire by the lack to decent food supplies to the people of Gaza, and even decent water supplies.
That was Akram Al-Satari reporting from the Gaza Strip. In Asia, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi says China's diplomacy has achieved positive outcomes over the past year. The senior diplomat made the comment on the sidelines of the ongoing two sessions meetings, where he took questions on China's foreign policy and diplomatic relations. Wang said China will continue upholding multilateralism and promoting greater democracy in international relations.
The year 2023 not only witnessed pioneering efforts, but also great harvests in China's diplomacy. Under the strong leadership of the CPC Central Committee, with Comrade Xi Jinping at its core, the Chinese Foreign Service fully implemented the guiding principles set forth at the 20th CPC National Congress. We took steps to promote international solidarity and cooperation, and offered solutions to crises and challenges. We contributed to world peace and development, and broke new ground in China's diplomatic theory and practice. In the past year, President Xi Jinping hosted two major diplomatic events in China, attended three multilateral summits, made four important overseas visits, and had more than 100 meetings and phone calls. Head of state diplomacy is getting increasingly irreplaceable in providing strategic guidance.
We
will uphold fairness and justice and further establish the ethos of China's diplomacy. We will practice true multilateralism and promote greater democracy in international relations. On issues of principle concerning the legitimate rights and interests of developing countries and the future of humanity, we will be more unequivocal and we will shoulder greater moral responsibility and press ahead in the right direction of history.
The foreign minister also talked about bilateral relations with reference to Russia, the EU, the US, and ASEAN countries. Also at the conference, Wang Yi said China will extend visa exemptions to six European countries on a pilot basis. So far, China had signed mutual visa exemption agreements with over 150 countries. Of these, 23 nations have forged visa-free agreements with China. In December, China granted unilateral visa-free entry for citizens of six countries, including France, Germany, Spain, the Netherlands, Italy, and Malaysia. Peter Oliver talks to business insiders in Berlin for their reactions.
The ITB Berlin is the world's largest trade fair for the travel and tourism industry, held every year in the German capital. Among those pitching themselves as the dream destination for holidaymakers is China.
There are many reasons to come to China, but the most important one, I think, is because of its history and modern development. Everyone knows that China is a country with a long history, and Beijing is the city that best represents China's ancient culture. Beijing as a city has a history of thousands of years, and as a capital it has a history of more than 860 years.
In December, citizens of France, Germany, Spain, the Netherlands, Italy, and Malaysia were given visa-free entry to China for 15 days for tourism and business. Ireland and Switzerland were added to the list in January. It's been a popular move.
Since the country announced this visa-free policy, we can see that more and more foreign guests, especially European guests, are becoming more and more interested in coming to China. I believe that we can see more people coming now, and in the future, there will definitely be more European guests coming to China.
From the sprawling, vibrant city life of Shanghai to an army of terracotta soldiers on duty for over 2,000 years, to the imperial splendor of the Forbidden City, in the sun, or even the very cold. Those specializing in bringing Europeans to China say the best way to understand the country is to visit.
I think it's not just about seeing with your eyes, because when you come to China, you have to see more traditional attractions, and then you have to enjoy Chinese food, and then feel the Chinese culture.
That was people from the tourism industry sharing their hope as China continues its efforts to facilitate travel for foreign citizens. Turning to the Americas, in the U.S. race for president, it's now almost certain that there will be a rematch between former President Donald Trump and Democratic incumbent President Joe Biden. Both candidates took huge steps towards clinching their party's nominations during primaries on what's known as Super Tuesday. Trump is now the last remaining Republican after his rival Nikki Haley announced she's dropping out. Hendrix Brandy has details.
Across America on Tuesday, voters in 16 states and a U.S. territory cast ballots for local races and for president. Millions more had already voted early on this Super Tuesday, when more than a third of all delegates to the presidential nominating conventions are awarded.
We have one of the lowest.
President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump swept most of the early primary contests and caucuses.
The stakes in 2024 are, it's safe to say, huge. This presidential primary contest is a dress rehearsal for November's general election, when the result will really matter.
I feel like so much is riding on it, just in terms of domestic policies as well as foreign policy.
Two most likely candidates have very different directions they want to take the country, so a lot of consequences this year.
As well as a lot of dissatisfaction. polls show a majority of voters don't want Biden or Trump, who faced off in 2020, to run again this year.
So I don't feel either one of the two candidates are qualified to do the job.
This is what we have to select from. And I will not pick a person that is spewing hatred.
Well, the best option would be if both Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden decided to retire and went on and did something else.
There are no signs that will happen. And indeed, both the Democrat and Republican scored decisive victories from coast to coast on Tuesday, putting their respective nominations within reach.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one.
President Biden said the primary results leave the American people with a clear choice. And on Wednesday, Republican Nikki Haley, who lost all but one primary the day before, suspended her campaign and declined to endorse Trump, her rival.
It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. This is now his time for choosing.
Many Americans have yet to tune in to this presidential race.
I think a lot of people are disengaged at this point.
But their time to choose is coming, exactly 8 months after a primary day that clearly defined this country's options.
That was Hendrik Sabrandi reporting on the latest developments of the U.S. presidential race. The UN Security Council has held a closed-door emergency meeting about Haiti. Violence in the Caribbean nation is spiraling out of control, and its prime minister remains stranded abroad. Alastair Biverstock reports on the latest developments in Haiti.
As Haitian forces fight criminal gangs in Port-au-Prince to maintain state control, the country's prime minister, Ariel Henry, is struggling to find a way to return to his Caribbean nation. After departing the country for talks in Kenya on an international military intervention, attacks on Haiti's airports left him stranded on his return in Puerto Rico, where he delivered a message to his country Tuesday.
All perpetrators and co-perpetrators must be identified and brought to Haitian justice. We hope that the penalties will be announced soon.
As fighting rages amid the coup attempt, the gangs have issued demands, threatening escalations of violence if they are ignored.
If Ariel Henry doesn't resign, if the international community continues to support him, we'll be heading straight for a civil war that will lead to genocide. Either Haiti becomes a paradise or a hell for all of us.
Emboldened by the Prime Minister's absence and reinforced by a 4,000 inmate jailbreak Sunday, the gangs are calling their coup d'etat a revolution.
We want freedom. It's going to take time because we're fighting a powerful system, but we'll get there.
Thousands of residents have been forced to flee their homes amid the escalating violence, and few hold out hope for much resistance from the authorities.
These men said that they were going to invade the prison. They said they were going to burn down the police station, and they did. When the incidents occurred, the police fled. So they're showing us that the police are powerless.
It's absolutely catastrophic.
The UN's human rights expert on Haiti, Bill O'Neill, says one step the US could take now is cutting the Caribbean nation's supply of weapons.
I have another problem that the US needs to do in terms of being more active and assertive is stopping the flow of guns and munitions to Haiti. There's not a single gun or bullet that's manufactured in Haiti. Almost all of it comes from the United States. That's something we could do right now.
As Haiti fights for its future, the support of the international community, both from afar and on the ground, may now be its only hope.
That was Alastair Biverstock on the latest in Haiti. Peru has sworn in a new prime minister. Alberto Otarola resigned on Tuesday over allegations of influence peddling, although he denies any wrongdoing. Dan Collins reports from Lima.
Peru has a new prime minister, Gustavo Adriansen, formerly Peru's representative with the Organization of American States. Sworn in on Wednesday, Adriansen replaces Alberto Otarola, who resigned on Tuesday following a scandal. Otarola, who has led the cabinet since the end of 2022, is accused of using his influence to help a woman gain lucrative government contracts. A formal investigation has been launched into the allegations. The scandal arose when a Peruvian TV channel aired audio clips over the weekend of what it said were conversations between the woman and Otárola. The 57-year-old has denied any wrongdoing, but said he would step down to ensure a smooth transition.
I announced my decision to present my resignation as president of the Council of Ministers.
Otárola added that he was the victim of a political plot and that former President Martín Vizcarra was behind it. The allegations have been denied by Vizcarra. According to the TV program, the woman Otárola can be heard speaking to is 25-year-old Yazide Pinedo. She was reportedly awarded two contracts for work in Peru's defense ministry in 2023 that earned her a total of $14,000. Otárola can be heard on the audio clip declaring his love for Pinedo and asking her to send him her CV. He was Peru's defense minister until the end of 2022, when President Dina Boluarte took office and he was promoted. Political shakeups and cabinet reshuffles have become the norm in Peru, which has had six presidents in 7 years.
That was Dan Collins reporting from Lima. Recapping today's headlines, the US has expressed hope that a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip is still possible. Former US President Donald Trump and incumbent President Joe Biden are very likely to face up again in November's presidential race. And violence in Haiti is spiraling out of control and its prime minister remains stranded abroad. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Yu. Thank you for listening.